This is 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. Welcome to the Electric Drum. I am Jose Candelario. Today I am joined by Amir Glenn, and we're about to get into his story right now. Mr. Glenn, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me a little bit about where you grew up.
So I grew up right here in New Haven. I've lived in every hood in New Haven. I'm one of those faces where people see me and go like, I know you, but I just don't know where you from. I graduated right at James Hill House, you know, so I'm a part of the Bulldogs. I just grew up right here. I'm just a regular New Havener. I'm just as much New Haven as pizza is New Haven.
Tell me a little bit about growing up. What kind of, you know, you jumped around, as you so to speak. How were your parents for you?
Yeah, so, you know, my parents were pretty, you know, they were pretty good. My father was always in my life. My parents, they divorced and married 3 times. So that was absolutely fun. But eventually they split for good. But like I said, my father continued being in my life. And my mother's always been my rock, always been the one that was providing support and just guiding me through being. She would always say, like, I'm going to make sure you're going to be the best man that you possibly can be. So, yeah.
What kind of ethic did your mom really instill in you that you carry with you on a daily basis?
So, like, just kind of like my hard work. You know, she always told me to make sure that I put my best foot forward, make sure that everything that I did with a purpose. She was very consistent with that, that I was not able to go ahead and slack. She knew that one of the big things that I would love to do was slack, but she would be the one that could see that, you're not putting that you're all into that. And then she also said that I had the gift of gab. I was a person that could talk my way in and out of things. And she picked up on that very quickly and says, you know, Amir, it's great that you know how to talk, but you need to have something behind what you're talking about. Hmm.
You say your dad was in and out of your life. How important is it to still have that, you know, that male influence in your life? And you know, what would you have done without it?
Oh, yeah. So my father was solid. My father taught me a lot about, again, also hard work. I watched that man work doubles pretty much my whole entire life. You know, he passed away in 2019. But again, his biggest thing was about one of his favorite lines to me was it's not only your responsibility, but your duty to bless others as you become blessed. And so that's something that actually instilled. And again, it goes directly into my work. But yeah, like he was solid. Every one of those great memories of like going to Philadelphia and having a camping trip or doing something along those lines, you know, I lived a little different than some of my family members because he consistently took me and exposed me to things that not everybody got a chance to be exposed to.
You were telling me a story earlier about how you were, you know, you had a little Atari.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, definitely. I had, like, the first Nintendo on the block, you know. Oh,
okay.
So getting that, you know, getting those knock on the doors, can I play Nintendo and all of that wonderful stuff. So I remember, you know, those days, and my father used to be very consistent. It's funny, I do the same thing with my children as well. He used to talk about, you know, getting me used to a certain level of lifestyle, so that when I would get older, it would feel uncomfortable if I didn't have that type of lifestyle. So, you know, he always tried to make sure that I had the best. You know, if it was a new video game that came out, if it was Nintendo, if it was PlayStation 1, if it was PlayStation 2, Dad, I need to get this. And he's like, I'll make sure you have it. And then, you know, right now, as my kids, they always have the greatest and the best new things, new toys. Because again, as I've gotten older, when I don't have it, you know, I just work hard for it.
Mm. Working hard for it. It's a lost art.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about sacrifice and hard work and how much hard work it really is when you actually like what you're doing?
Well, it's not. It's not hard work. Another thing that I used to get from my father, one of the things that he used to say is that if you're having fun, it's not work. So make sure you have fun at whatever you do. Everything that we do, we continually have fun. People look at me and they ask, how is it? It's fun. It's always going to be fun for me. Because whatever's not fun, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to stress myself out doing anything. You know, it's a short life. Trying to be as happy as I possibly can while I'm living it.
Talk a little bit about your schooling. Where are you going to elementary school?
I went to Beecher. So I went to Beecher, LW Beecher. Actually, I'll go back a little further. I went to St. Peter's for kindergarten and first grade. Then I went to Beecher. Then I went to Sheridan. Moved out to Hamden. Went to Hamden Middle. Went to Hamden High for my freshman year and landed in Hill House. So, yeah, that is my schooling. You know, like I was, like I said, we pretty much moved a lot of different neighborhoods, you know, from Brownell Street on, you know, right off of Willie to Greenwich Avenue, right in the hill, Hazel Street in the Ville. Like, again, Hamden, we were on Arch Street. We lived on Edgewood. Like, we were pretty much, like I said, we landed. But I also had a big portion. My Nana and my granddaddy had a house on Bellevue Road, which is a big portion of my childhood. You know, we stayed there a few years, but it was consistent of going there consistently, being on Bellevue Road over here in the Beaver Hill Lane. So,
but moving around, though, it's still, you know, some people say, oh, you know, moving around really, but it makes you flexible, right?
Yeah.
Like, you, it doesn't change, doesn't affect you as much.
No, I mean, I think, you know, moving around, it did add that flexibility, but it also made me comfortable and not being necessarily too comfortable. You know, you don't want to get your roots up and then, like, mom's like, hey, we got to move. You know, you don't want to, like, dive all the way in. So, you know, like, being flexible with something that I'm really good at. Like, oh, okay. So, you know, that's what's one of my superpowers.
Moving around, keeping it moving. You went to James Hill House for your final years. Yeah. Who was the most influential teacher you had over there at Hill House?
Oh, actually, I got to give her a RIP, Doc Gilliam. She recently just passed away. She was she's one of my favorite teachers. She actually lived next door to my Nana and granddaddy's house. So I used to see her play with her children as well. But Doc Gilliam, she put a lot of into me, you know. And again, she caught on quickly that I had a gift of gab. She caught on very quickly. And I can see you talking your way out of this, but you still got to do your math homework. So, yeah, shout out to Doc.
How do you stay, how do you balance the street life? Because there's always alluring around here.
So, of course, you know, like I had plenty of friends and family that went ahead and did it. But I was also one of those kids that always had that something. And so a lot of my cousins and friends would be like, bruh, this not for you. So I usually, you know, strayed away from it. You know, you try to dip your toe in. And I remember specifically my cousin saying, like, if I catch you out here in the streets, you're going to have to deal with me. And so I was like, oh, all right. I don't want to have to deal with you. So I stayed out and I stayed humble and I stayed on my course. So
what curricular activity kept you really busy and off the streets?
So it was music. You know, music for a long time. There's some old DVDs from back in the day where I was doing production. I did a couple of different mixtapes for a couple of different rappers out here. But in particular, for a while there, I was hooking up a lot of the producers around here's computers. So I would, you know, I have to fix their computers up. I helped them install software and all that good stuff. So shout out to The Breed. I helped them out in the beginning. You know, like my cousin Troy Oliver, I helped him out as well. So I consistently, you know, kind of stayed focused in music. I actually was the store manager for a place called Daddy Junkie Music Store out in Orange, Connecticut. Shout out to them. They're no longer around. But I also helped to open up the Guitar Center out there in Orange as well. So I stayed focused in music for a long time until I detoured into IT work.
You're listening to The Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and right now you're listening to the words of Amir Glenn going through his life. So talk a little bit about that transition in life. And you seem to be a person who self-educates a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I tell people all the time, I'm regular. I graduated from Hill House, and that's it. I did a little bit of college. I never really finished. But when the opportunity came for me to learn, how to work on computers is actually through my uncle. He showed me a few things like, hey, you know, you can fix computers and do it yourself. And I grasped to it. I took my my couple of certifications and
which uncle was this? Just give him some love.
Oh,
now.
I'm sorry. Oh, my Uncle Lonnie. Shout out my Uncle Lonnie. Yeah. So yeah, he took me under his wing, showed me how to work with computers. I got some certifications that ended up leading me to you know, a few other positions. So, and when, like I said, I'm New Haven. So I went from, you know, Daddy Junkie Music Store to working at Comcast. I was a Comcast tech for a while, an escalation tech. So I used to deal with a lot of the escalations, which was pretty fun. But eventually from Comcast moving to Atlanta through Comcast, and then back once I had my son. And then I landed at the Apple Store. And from the Apple Store, I worked hard, got a bunch of certs from Apple as well. And then I landed at Yale University, where I still am today.
Talk about getting these certifications and how it's continuing education, right? I mean, even if you go to college, there's still plenty of certifications you can follow up on. How do you stay hungry for that knowledge?
I mean, well, like a lot of times it's just because you want to know. And then, like I said, certifications a lot of times are just, they're, you know, $100. And then you can have a cert that possibly can get you a job. And so I had my first certification was an A+ certification. And then from there, I went ahead and got
Can you describe what an A+ certification is for us regular folk?
Yeah. So an A+ certification is just your basic IT certification, learning how to learn. We're learning what different components are already called. And like I said, I was already doing that work. So it was just like, I already knew the answers. And basically, you know, like the first steps of what do you do when you walk to a computer and it's not working? You know, first step, check and see if it's plugged in, you know, like stuff like that, the simple stuff. But that at the time was leading me into a job that could possibly pay me $60,000 a year. So why not grab a cert of something that I already know how to do? It's $100. It was a no brainer. But then there's other certifications like mobile certifications, which you can fix your iPhones, fix your iPads, all that good stuff from Apple. There's different certifications that they had as well for like for some of their systems, teaching. Again, going back to music, teaching Logic. I had a certification for Logic. So I was teaching Logic, which is the music software program that people do a lot of recording on. So yeah, like it's just search and it's building all of that up to having, you know, a kind of a tight resume that Yale said, oh, you have a tight resume. We want to bring you over. So
it's always more than one way to skin a cat, right? Cause not, and I mean, the truth is now education is, formal education is not for everybody.
Absolutely.
But sometimes you gotta, you know, take the lumps in the real world to really find out where you want to go. Who helped navigate you through that, all that? Was it yourself, determination, or was there someone always like, hey, you know, make sure you get that knowledge?
Well, I mean, like I said, I would have to lean on both parents. My mother always saw that in me. She always saw that, again, that I was good, but I would always kind of slack because I was good. And then my father seeing like, you know, like, hey, you have something that other people just don't have. Some people don't understand technology the way that you understand it, and take your stuff to the next level. You know, and so having them both, you know, secure me in that actually, you know, like push me towards, you know, achieving my goals.
How much confidence plays in all this and building confidence? Cause you seem to have built it over time.
Yeah.
People, when they're indecisive in what they want to do, lack that confidence. Mm-hmm. Is this one way to build it up?
Well, yeah. I mean, confidence is a moment by moment builder. You build confidence, you know, through a lot of different things. It's funny, I was just talking to my son about this, about how like you know, like how one thing that you can do, like for instance, he was experiencing anxiety. And shout out to Miss Flake and the Monk Center. He did that for a summer program, and he was experiencing anxiety and for several years, and it was pretty much hindering him. But through her tutelage and through her guidance, he was able to get up and sing. And this was the first time that I had ever heard him sing. And I was like, I was blown away that he was singing. And it's funny because ever since that one performance during the summer, he's been on a trajectory of just consistently building and building his confidence to the point. So he actually stopped seeing his therapist and said, I'm so confident in what I'm doing. The anxiety has gone away. Besides, I can recognize the anxiety and know that I got this. And I was like, you know why you have it? And he's like, no, I don't. I was like, because you built enough confidence in yourself to know that you got this. So it, like I said, it's just those small moments, those small wins that help to build your confidence.
We're talking Marcella?
Yeah, yeah. Miss Flake, yeah.
The full name, please.
Marcella Flake, yeah.
From the
Monk Center, yeah. The
Thelonious Monk?
Yeah, there, Thelonious Monk, yeah, yeah.
Monk family, Pamela Monk. Okay.
Shout out to the monks. Yeah.
There you go. I got to pull it out of you, man. You got to spread the love. You on YBC. But that is true. Building confidence in our youth. But you had an example of it in your life with your family. It's always building it in yourself. And now you're passing it on to the youth. How did you get, so you're at Yale doing your thing. How did you get hooked into this, your next venture?
All right. So it's easy. Let's go back a little bit. Fresh out of high school, a couple of my buddies actually went ahead and they went to college. One in particular being Darrell Hardy. And as I say that name, a lot of people are going to go ahead and go, hey, I know Darrell. He sold me my first house. So after he graduated from UConn, he was able to get into to real estate. And I tell him that, you know, he graduated with a psychology degree, I believe. And I was like, this helps you with real estate in particular. But so he was beating us up all through our 20s, telling us that we needed to buy a house. And, you know, we were like, well, man, shut up. We don't want to hear that. You know, like we're trying to go to the club. We're trying to go to Van Dome. I don't care about going there. I don't care about a house. But as I got older and had my son, I wanted to, you know, have a little stability. And then I got into Yale and I found out about the Yale's home buyer program. And so I was like, all right, you know, this is the opportunity. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, you know, like I'm getting my credit and stuff right. You know, I'm ready to look for a house. And he says, all right, great. You're going to buy a multifamily house. And I'm like, I don't want to be a landlord. And he was like, I don't care what you want. You're going to buy a multifamily house. I was like, okay, all right, if you're sure. And so I ended up buying my first property on Hubinger Street. And it was the first time that I've ever lived for free, you know, besides, you know, as an adult, like not having to worry about paying my rent because the mortgage was paid by the tenants living there. And it was enough money left over to take care of the actual bill. So no electric bill, no gas bill. No Comcast bill. Everything was paid. And it was the first time I was like, oh, this is why I'm supposed to do the multifamily thing. And then I got the itch. I got the bug. At the time I had another wife. And so my ex-wife was getting annoyed at the tenants. And she was like, hey, we need to go ahead and get a single family. I'm not trying to listen to them, you know, walk over me. So I said, sure. We can go ahead and do that. So, Darrell, through his tutelage, he said to reach out to a bank about a HELOC. And I said, what the heck is a HELOC? It's a home equity line of credit. So we went ahead and we did that. And they assessed the property after I had fixed up a few things, $200,000 more than what I had paid for. I was able to grab $130,000 of equity out in cash. It's the, you know, like seeing $130,000 in your bank account is life-changing, knowing that this was an $8,000 investment and immediately changed. I was able to go ahead and purchase the single family, but I also purchased another multifamily that was on Congress Avenue. And I began landlording, for real landlording. And it comes with a lot of different things. It comes with a lot of different experiences. It comes with evictions. It comes with, finding tenants that you look at and you're like, oh man, this person is great. And then they're like, they become hoarders in the house. You got people that are bringing roaches and you got mice and all different other type of things. And like I said, landlording really, and like it was a tremendous teacher, but it was also a humbling experience.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Canaloro. This is Amir Glenn going through his story in his final reincarnations of a businessman here in New Haven. Yeah. The lumps. But you know what I've noticed over your whole time? That you're constantly not only investing in yourself through the search, but you're willing to reach out and listen to somebody. How important is it to get to that point where you realize you don't know everything and that you need help?
Yeah, I mean, well, a smart man learns from his own mistakes, but a wise man learns from the mistakes of others. And that's something, again, that's a jewel from my father. Again, this is the reason why it's, I consistently look either for mentorship or have you done this before? Because why would I go ahead and stumble my way through it if I can actually just get some insight? It's always important to learn from others and their experiences.
Mm. So you're learning landlording, and this brings about another venture because you see that there is a gap in just basic education. I mean, some people are not even taught how to be a tenant or taught how to live, but yet they're in this situation. So what has evolved from that?
Yeah, so one of my big things that I used to tell every tenant, I want to be your last landlord because I know how real estate had empowered me. And just being, like I said, just a regular kid. So, like, I'm just like, you know, like, I want you to feel and I want you to understand what real estate could do for you. So out of my time being a landlord for the last decade, I've had three tenants move out and purchase their own home. And shout out to Mark Simmons and shout out to Tanya. I can't pronounce your last name. I never was able to. and to Quetta, they definitely they did their thing. But again, this was it was something that was super important for me to be able to go ahead and we always call it each one teach one. You know, one of my favorite songs back before, you know, I became a Christian man was "It ain't no fun if the homies can't have none." Mm. And so I take that motto with me today. And it ain't no fun if the homies can't have none. So it ain't no fun if I'm out here living good and y'all out here living bad. And if you know me, then you know that that's my motto. I want to try to make sure that everybody gets on.
So you start a nonprofit.
Well, so like there's a whole story behind that. So again, landlording, doing my thing, normal landlording stuff. Somebody reached out to me from Christian Community Action. Her name is Fateria Sheets. And she said, "Hey, you know, I have some tenants. They're kind of beat up when it comes down to their financial stuff." And I'm like, "Well, what does that mean?" She was like, "Well, they might have an eviction on their record. Or they their credit is shot. But the biggest thing is that they're homeless. They're living in a shelter. But we can provide Section 8 vouchers for them." I said, "All right, so they need a little bit of work." And she's like, Yeah. "Well, we're good, you know." So my first tenant worked out great. They're actually still with us. She's amazing. Second tenant, not so much. Again, like you said, is sometimes you have to teach people like, "Hey, it's not okay for you to move people in and then bring their stuff in the basement and rent space down in the basement and then give them my phone number to have them call and scream at me when I don't even know who they are." So there was a lot of different things that happened. But on the third one Terry reached back out and said, I have a third tenant that might work out for you. And I said, "You know, I'll try this one." Again, I'm landlording, I'm doing my thing, building my generational wealth for me and my family. I'm good. So this time it was right before Christmas. Literally, it was the weekend of Thanksgiving, and the Section 8 had came through. They had already approved the house. It was time for the family to come in. And so as we're teaching the tenant, you know, kind of the normal stuff. Here's a smart thermostat. This is how it works. And here's the garbage disposal. This is how it works. The dishwasher works. The kids are running around. They're just kind of like running around, doing their thing, doing what kids do. And as we're talking, the little boy mid-run stops, looks me in the face and says, "This is what I prayed for. I prayed for a bedroom for Christmas. Thank you so much." And he gave me a hug. And immediately my eyes well up in tears. I look at my wife and says, this is the work we're going to do for the rest of our lives. And thus Wealth Beacon Group was born. So ever since then, we've housed 6 families, including 15 children. We've taken them out of the shelter and we moved them into our apartments.
Mm. How fulfilling is this?
Well, it's super fulfilling because, you know, it's not just regular housing. You know, most people are like, oh, you know, that's cool. Well, landlord, he has a heart. He's going ahead and housing tenants from the shelter. But again, this one comes from my mother, which is, you know, you give a man a fish, he can eat for the day. You teach him how to fish, he can eat for a lifetime. And so, again, that is our motto. Our motto is that, you know, the housing is cool, but if I can teach you about some financial literacy and how to build up your credit, how to properly bank, who the heck is FICA and why is he taking all of my money? You know, if you teach them all that wonderful stuff, but along with that, also provide mental health services. Again, most people don't understand the reason why they're such bad spenders is because they have bad self-esteem or they're in a bout of depression. And the only time they feel good about themselves is when they go buy themselves a pair of Jordans. Or they're spending money because the last time that they had money, it went so quick that they have the PTSD behind it that I got to go ahead and I got to get rid of it. So we are providing all of those services. And that's, you know, what leads into our Shine Academy. We launched it March 11th. So a few weeks ago where it's Tuesday and Thursday of every week where you learn the basics from credit repair to banking, to taxes, to how to save, to how to budget, all of these wonderful things that our tenants get a first, you know, first term at. They get their first hands on it. But we also open it up to the wider community, so everybody in New Haven and throughout Connecticut can hop on. It's just directly on Zoom. You don't even have to be in. You just have to hop on, sit back and listen. Mm.
Proving a point, because some people say, you know, you can't make a living helping the poor, but I mean, you're not ultra rich off of it, but you're still making ends meet, and well, more than that, I mean,
yeah,
you're actually making it happen. And once they get educated and move out, I mean,
then I've created another Wealth Beacon, somebody else that can go ahead and they can look at it and say, oh, how'd you do that? And so when that's what most time people go, well, what is Wealth Beacon? What does that mean? And so I always bring it to the terms of there's that one cousin that has went crazy in the gym. And that's all he does is lift weights and eat good. And so when we try to go ahead and lose that 15 pounds, that's the first cousin we call in. Like, hey, you know, like, hey, can you help me, you know, lose this weight? I mean, it also can be to the point of, you know, that auntie that we all have that. She's all every 3 years she got a new S500 and she got land down south and she's doing her thing financially and she has a nice big house. And we always reach out to her when it comes down to, hey, we need some money for this, you know, like, mm-hmm. And again, you know, it's asking these individuals and hoping that they are able to share with you how did they get there. That's what a Wealth Beacon is. That's what we're trying to make all of our tenants Wealth Beacons. How did you go from homelessness to home ownership? That's the guy.
You're bridging a big old gap, man. I appreciate it. We're nearing our end of our time right now. Okay, you know, final words you want to send out to the community?
No, I mean, the biggest thing that I want to just spread the word is, you know, we are right here based in New Haven. We're trying to grow. We want to expand. Currently, there are 65 families in New Haven shelters that have Section 8 vouchers, but don't have a place to stay. Someone asked us, you know, like, why do we think that is? And we said, because Wealth Beacon doesn't have any more housing. So we're putting a call out for people to come and help donate. The website is wealthbeacon.org /give. You can donate right there. So yeah, please, you know, and spread the word. Tell everybody about it. Tell everybody about, you heard there's a guy named Amir that, and him and his wife, they went ahead and created a thing called Wealth Beacon, and they're trying to help everybody just move to the next level.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
What's the wife's name?
Yvette Glenn, that's my bae, that's my hun. The Bible says that when a man finds a wife, he finds a good thing, but he also finds favor with the Lord. And so I am super blessed and highly favored because of my wife. Shout out to you, bae.
I got to pull out all the shout outs out of you, man.
Shout out.
Because you have a lot of good people in your life. With that said, this has been the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario. This has been the words of Amir Glenn. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And like always, to the general public, thank you for listening.